to go.
That's Steve's theme music, really? Okay. Well, the hard part of the job is over. I woke up on time, found parking, and made it to the studio here in the Steve Cochran building. It's Bob Surratt, and I'm glad you're awake. The good part about this time of day and working these hours, of course, you get your light traffic. You're off early and have the day if you can stay awake. And best of all, great water pressure in the shower.
First dibs on the water.
Yeah, the best part is parking in traffic. There's no traffic or parking. It's very easy to find.
There's always traffic on the Eisenhower. Hey.
Now, does Steve insist, Mary, that you be in another studio and Steve, that you be in the newsroom, not in here? Only Dave Bennett is allowed in the actual studio. It's kind of like, does Cochran like pull a Jonathan Brandmeier? Is that what he's doing? He wants to be alone in here? How does that work?
I think it's a seniority thing. I think Dave's been here the longest, he gets that pleasure.
And he likes the way I smell.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Smell is a big part of it.
I think he just likes to look at Dave.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No.
It's fun to be here. And coming up on the broadcast this morning, a lot of fun stuff. But, you know, when I hear people like on a morning show promoting everything that's going to be happening, like at 6, at 7, at 8, I'm thinking, well, people have places to go, things to do. They're not going to call in sick because there's going to be a nice guest at 8:30. So, I'll promote things if you like, if the boss likes it. In the old days, you know, it was fun. You could do anything you want. And the boss wouldn't be up, or if the management people were on vacation, you could do whatever you want. But now it's all ruined because of the internet. They can listen wherever they are. And also the other thing that's been ruined here, as far as radio is concerned, is you used to be able to come in unkempt, unshaved, no shower, dirty clothes, and now all the webcams and CLTV, and it's what's happened to this business?
Yeah, radio has become television, Bob.
Yeah, we can no longer say you have that radio voice because now you have to have the looks as well.
Well, it was it was good while it lasted. It's going to be hard tonight though to go to sleep at an early hour and then make it here tomorrow morning. I'll tell you why in just a second. Well, I was a good boy last night, got to bed early, but tonight is going to be a problem, I guess, because I know I'm going to want to watch the Bears. I can't help it. It's, what, a 7:20
will be kickoff, yes.
And that's on Fox tonight, right, I think?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what do we think about their chances of backing into the playoffs?
Well, that's one way to put it. If they get into the playoffs, they're not really backing in because they're going to have to win out. So it's right. Not like, I guess if every team ahead of them were to collapse and they were to get in at, at 9-7 or something, or 8-8, that would be different. But they're going to have to keep winning, and they have an opportunity to do it. I mean, it's certainly not going to be easy. They're going to have to beat the Packers. They're going to have to win tonight. They're going to have to beat the Packers in Lambeau. They're going to have to beat Kansas City and at Minnesota. But is it possible? It really is, especially if those other teams should stumble along the way.
I have a confession to make. Once the Bears seem to be out of it, I was kind of rooting for them to really not play well because I love listening to Obradovich and Hampton after the games here on the station. I think tomorrow we're going to talk to those guys, and they're going to be on tonight, aren't they?
They're on tonight.
After the game.
Yeah, they'll come on at 10:30 tonight. The game should end a little bit after 10:15, 10:20, something like that. And here's the thing about that, Bob, is the Bears don't have to lose for them to be all fired up either. I mean,
you can
tune in after a win, and they're just as angry as they would be after a loss.
It's hilarious. They're just as mad. And, another good thing, Bob, when you come in tomorrow morning, you'll get their leftover food.
Oh, they have a little buffet set up?
Oh, yes.
A little buffet. Yeah, they'll have their meatballs and their pasta and their big salad, and they usually don't put it back in the refrigerator, so it's really edible at, you know, 5 a.m.
And do they have a cardiologist in the studio just in case Obradovich is extra ornery? How does that work? I mean, Hampton gets pretty fired up, too.
They dim the lights a little bit, and they play soft music.
And Carmen is what he knows how to work the defibrillator in the hallway.
Yeah, Mark's kind of the referee. He does a good job.
Oh, wait, he might be on his honeymoon. We don't
know. No, he's going to be here.
Oh, he'll be back.
Yeah,
okay.
He'll be here.
My nephew, Judd, is, and now, by the way, I am known as Judd Surratt's uncle.
Yes.
He's the play-by-play radio voice of the Boston Bruins, and the Hawks are playing in Boston tonight, aren't they?
They are. They are, and it's probably the last thing the Blackhawks need right now because they're struggling, and the Bruins are the best team in the National Hockey League. So,
what happened?
They won 8 in a row.
Yeah, I thought the Hawks, the last time I checked, they had turned things around. They were on a winning streak. What happened?
Well, they had, and then they ran into back-to-back games against Colorado where they got smoked, and they've also lost some guys to illness and injury here, and they've been a little shorthanded the last few games. So hopefully it should be a little bit better in that area tonight. And we're going to talk to defenseman Eric Gustafson for breakfast with the Blackhawk later on.
Yes, and I'll have some very probing personal questions for him.
I've
been working
perfect.
On that. I don't know if Steve Cochran does this, but the morning show on WGN Radio, going way back, there's a history. I don't think Wally Phillips ever did this. I don't know if Spike ever did, but I know Bob Collins would sneak in a record. He would play some music once in a while early.
Yes.
And I thought because I want to keep the tradition alive, and also, let's face it, I'm a disc jockey. I need to play some records, that I would look for an excuse to play some music today. So at 5:21, how about we go back in music history to this date, December 5th, 1976. There was a journalist who worked in the UK by the name of Phil Sutcliffe, and he took Stuart Copeland, who was in a band called Curved Air back then. He took Stuart to see a Newcastle, England band that was called The Last Exit. And this journalist introduced Stuart Copeland to Last Exit's bass player. That bass player was Sting. And a few months later, they formed this group, The Police. Thanks for the indulgence. That was as much for my benefit as anyone else's. Kind of gets me going, wakes me up, puts me in a good mood. Sorry, Dave, I had to crank the speaker here in the studio up full blast like in the old days.
I didn't know the speakers could get that loud.
Or you mean they don't get turned up for the Cars for Kids commercial?
Not usually,
okay.
No.
All right. It's 5:26, and coming up, I'm going to tell you why you need to brush your teeth at least 3 times a day for your heart health. And also, vitamin K. Older adults, particularly men, need to make sure they get enough of it. How do you get it, and what's the story there? We'll get into that. And how can the keto diet help beat the flu? We have the answer. Mrs. Surratt is on the keto diet, so I know all about that. I tried it for about 2 weeks, and then I gave it up and went back to my Edo diet. Just eat everything. But
that's not the Cheeto diet, is it?
No. I have been known to be on that diet occasionally, though. So anyway, glad to be with you on the Steve Cochran Show this morning. And we're going to take a quick break here, get you caught up on news, weather, sports, traffic, and then more to come on your radio. Oh, there we go. It's that button, Bob. Did Cochran talk about the study that revealed successful people wake up at 5:30 in the morning after just 6.5 hours sleep? Did he discuss that with you?
No, we need to hear that.
Okay, how about after the news right here? It's 5:30. Good morning. It's Thursday, December 5. It's 5:39 here on the Steve Cochran Show. Successful people start their day at 5:30 a.m., according to a study that just came out. Did you hear about this? 1 in 3 high achievers set their alarms early after only about 6.5 hours sleep to create more time for meditating, networking, and checking emails, according to this research. However, such early starts come at a cost. Almost 1 in 4 self-described successful people admit to getting just 6.5 hours of sleep a night. The survey found roughly 1 in 10 self-described successful people start the day at 4:30 in the morning, with the number rising to 35.2% at 5:30 in the morning. And then they have a list here of how successful people use their time before work. Number one, catching up on emails. Number two, reading the latest news. Three, scheduling the day ahead. And then after that, spending time with loved ones, just ahead of checking social media.
Doesn't nothing seem, about going to seem, work.
No, no, nothing here about about filling in for radio hosts.
Yeah. What about getting up at 3:30 in the morning? There's no stat for that, huh?
No. It says here that if you're thinking of shaking up your routine, make sure you're waking up early for the right reasons. If you're doing it to crack on with your work before the day has even begun, this might be counterproductive and could suggest it's time to find a new job altogether.
Oh, yeah. Tell me that 25 years ago.
Well, first of all, 6.5 hours, I consider that sleeping in.
Yeah, me too, Dave.
I can't remember the last time I had 6.5 hours of sleep.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Some people don't need as much, but some people really do need eight hours.
I'm not up at this hour very much, but whenever I am and I'm on the road, I'm always amazed at the traffic. It starts so early. Who are all these people? Are they morning disc jockeys, talk show hosts? Where's everybody going already? But I guess people live further from their jobs because, you know, wherever you get a good job, you take it, and it doesn't matter how long the commute is, right? So, remember when the rush hour would basically be, you know, between 7 and 8:30 in the morning, and then between 4:30 and 6 or so, and it was always going in the same directions. Now it's going every direction. Yes. all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's harder. The reverse commute is tougher now than the traditional commute.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Oh, yeah. It really is. It's Bob Surratt with you. Yeah, I recognize that guy, and good to be here on the Steve Cochran Show. And we'll get to those health stories about how important brushing your teeth may be for your heart. Also, the deal on vitamin K and the keto diet. Let's get to Orion Samuelson first with the Agribiz Report.
Good morning. In the grain trade yesterday at the Chicago Board of Trade, soybean futures moved higher, and you know the reason, some renewed optimism about a U.S.-China trade deal. At the end of the day, we saw March wheat 2.25 cents higher. March corn, on the other hand, was down 2.75 cents. Turning to the livestock trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange yesterday, cattle futures fell, pressured by technical selling. Hog markets slightly firmer. You know why. Optimistic talk about China and the U.S. The January feeder cattle futures dropped 1.5 cents in the trade yesterday. February live cattle ended down $1.47 yesterday. And that's how we traded the markets. Again, every day we get a new feeling about whether or not there will be a China-U.S. trade deal. Meanwhile, we have gotten a break in agricultural trade, according to Secretary Perdue and U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer. China has finally lifted its ban on U.S. poultry and poultry products. And according to Ambassador Lighthizer, that is great news for both America's farmers and China's consumers. China is an important export market for American poultry, and they will now be able to export more than $1 billion worth of poultry and poultry products each year to China. So we did get that done with China, but haven't gotten the other situations finished yet, and so we'll continue to work on them. That's Ag Biz. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Did you brush your teeth yet? Here's some interesting health news. The bacteria in our mouths may hold the key to many facets of our health. Researchers have found intriguing clues about pancreatic and esophageal cancer risk in mouth bacteria, and some studies have linked poor oral hygiene with respiratory problems. And according to this new study, atrial fibrillation and also general heart disease is linked to a healthy mouth. Brushing your teeth three times or more a day was linked with a 10% lower chance of developing AFib and a 12% lower risk of heart failure. Also in the health headlines this morning, older adults, particularly men, need to make sure they get enough vitamin K. New research showing that too little vitamin K is associated with age-related concerns such as cognitive function, heart health, and mobility. According to a cardiologist at the University of Michigan associated with this study, vitamin K is important because it's involved in blood clotting. It's also required to make proteins that affect bone, cartilage, and blood vessel health. Vitamin K is emerging as being critical in keeping tissues you don't want to calcify from calcifying. For example, calcified cartilage in the knees is linked to osteoarthritis. And how do you get vitamin K? There are two main types, found mostly in dark green vegetables, egg yolks also, beef and fermented foods. And where else? I guess you could get it in a vitamin.
Can I suggest something?
Yes, sir.
You know, a great source of vitamin K? Kale.
I knew it.
No, I knew this was coming.
Yes. Yeah, Marianne puts it. Yeah, she puts it in this green shake she makes for me every day, which tastes like the lawn, but it's very, very healthy. And you're right. Kale is a great source.
And you can make that taste better. I doubt it tastes like the lawn.
Did you bring
Knowing
some?
Marianne, I can't imagine she's giving you lawn-flavored shakes.
But are you a goat, Bob? Do you eat lawn often?
Oh, my goodness. I don't want to get in trouble. She might be awake. We'll get to the, speaking of her, the keto diet and how it may help you from prevent you from getting the flu, and also the Blue Zone diet. What are the people doing who live to be 100? We'll tell you about that after Steve has our Associated Bank Thought Leader conversation.
Our Thought Leader this morning is Dan Behrens, Senior Vice President at Associated Bank in the Commercial Real Estate Department. Dan, good morning. Welcome back.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Glad to have you on this morning. We want to talk a little bit about the commercial real estate market in Chicago. Saw the story at Crane's Chicago Business about investors avoiding the market for some reason. What is going on here?
I think what everyone's a little nervous about it is uncertainty. Uncertainty in the Chicago market is really driven by the real estate taxes. The new assessor is bumping taxes on the northern suburbs so far, and it's going to make its way down. And you know, the indication is that he's going to be increasing assessments on commercial properties, laying kind of the large increase in the real estate taxes on commercial property versus residential. And that really makes Chicago kind of a lower target, lower tier class for institutional investors.
And we want to give our listeners an idea of just what we're talking about here. This article says, and they quote the Real Capital Analytics out of New York, that the real estate, commercial real estate sales in Chicago down 33% in the first 9 months of the year, falling nearly $7.7 billion. That's a big chunk of change.
It's a very big chunk of change. When I saw it, I was a little taken aback. I wasn't really expecting that. I think our experience with our investors, we're predominantly a construction lender. We have a lot of good turnover. We face a lot of payoffs as we go throughout the year. I mean, I thought personally 2018 was what I thought possibly an anomaly as a substantially higher investment sales market. So I'm not as I'm still a little concerned with how the numbers are shaking out for 2019, but I think 2018 was an abnormally high period. I'd like to see what those numbers are going back maybe 3 or 4 years to kind of flatten out that spike. You know, I think there's still a big draw for investment on the coasts versus Chicago. I mean, the coasts are much more attractive in terms of rent growth cap rates versus the Midwest and Chicago.
Going into 2020, there's even more concern about this trend continuing. And I know you've seen both labor and land prices going up. How is that possibly going to impact these stats going forward?
So with what we've seen, I'd say over the last 24, 48 months is labor prices have gone up at least 10%. Land prices are increasing, but we don't have the rent growth that the coasts do. The coasts have much more interest, call it 10 to 11% rent growth, at least office, industrial, and sometimes multifamily. I think the rent growth here is much more static, much more single digit, closer to, you know, the 3 to 5% rent growth. And developers really can't, and myself as a real estate lender, it gets harder and harder to fund projects when the costs are increasing and potentially the expenses for the finished product are increasing, but the rent growth just isn't there. You know, the difficulty with that is it makes the developers pause in their development, and thus we get into a worse cycle. If there's no development, there's no new real estate taxes coming in, and now we're kind of back in the same situation.
And we've been talking, I think, mostly here about the city, but talk to us a little bit about the suburbs. Are any of the suburbs faring any better?
I think the suburban office market in particular hasn't been faring all that well. I mean, I think there is still development in the suburban office market. It's not as robust as it is in Chicago. There are some tech tenants who are moving downtown, trying to attract younger talent. But there will still always be a strong suburban office market. I think where the suburbs are going to make up for that lack of development in office will be in industrial and multifamily. I think multifamily is still really strong in the suburbs of Chicago, as well as the collar counties and the collar suburbs of the city with the industrial development distribution warehouses that'll really drive some growth in the suburban markets.
I want to switch gears here to another really cool story I saw, and this is probably something that you deal with on a day-in, day-out basis, the real estate appraisals. Everything seems to be being disrupted these days, and I saw the story about these entrepreneurs who are revolutionizing, this headline says, the commercial real estate appraisal process. What's going on here?
You're right. It is something we deal with every day. The appraisal task is a very daunting task. The article that you're referencing is two young entrepreneurs are trying to streamline the appraisal process. I mean, right now, it's at least a 3 to 4 week process. Appraisal companies can certainly tighten up that time frame obviously at cost, but there's just a lot of data that's included in appraisals, and the data can't be overlooked. And the entrepreneurs are trying to streamline this process to standardize it and lessen the time that appraisers have really to focus on busy work that really isn't the nuts and bolts of what we're looking for in appraisals.
We put this article from Forbes. Noah Isaacs and John Meadows, their company's called Bowery Valuation. They have automated some of the tasks that we've been talking about here. So I think one of the automated tasks is some of the charts and graphs that are done from some of the data. They've been able to automate that and also making some sort of maps. Does artificial intelligence maybe have a role in this in the future?
I would say so. I think AI would be able to help people like the Bowery Valuations and generate additional information in a much faster time period and compress the cycle required for an appraisal. But like I said, that's a vast amount of information. This is a very large country. There's a lot of real estate, and for them to generate quicker comps would be advantageous, but still a daunting task.
You know, we're here at the end of the year, Dan, and I'm just curious how things have gone this year. If you had to put a grade on this year and the work that you do and the business that you've seen, what would you say?
Personally, for myself and Associated Bank, I think in our commercial real estate group, I would give this an A-plus year. I mean, we had a banner year internally here at the bank, and everything's been just all hands on deck, and it's been a very busy year, a year that we've seen a lot of growth, and it's been good to see the developers really going out, taking advantage of a good quality market, and we're helping them kind of achieve their goals.
Well, here's to hoping that continues for you in 2020 as well. It's always good having you here. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Thanks, Steve. Sure. Anyone can call me at 312-544-4657, or my email is daniel.barrons@associatedbank.com. That's daniel.barrins@associatedbank.com. Realestatereview.com.
All right. Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate it, Steve.
Dan Behrens is Senior Vice President in the Commercial Real Estate Group at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. We'll do that every Thursday at this time. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, December the 5th. Import and export prices for October and the weekly look at first-time jobless claims lead off today's economic reports. Trade analyst forecasting export prices falling nearly $205 billion and import prices a little bit more, $253 billion. There are expected to be about 226 million workers filing initial claims for jobless benefits, up just about 2,000 over the last week. Also today, earnings from Dollar General, Kroger, Tiffany, and American Outdoor. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, December 5th.
As promised, the keto diet can help beat the flu. Since we're all in the Breakfast Club here today, this is a good reminder that the results of a new study in mice suggest that the body may be able to defeat the influenza virus if a person has the right sort of diet, a ketogenic or keto diet. Now, I know about this because Mrs. Surratt is on this diet. And basically, you're not having sugar. That means no fruit, no carbs, or very little. And it's all protein. It's really healthy fats, avocados. And supposedly, that can help beat the flu.
I tried it. Dairy?
Yeah. No dairy.
No dairy. Just protein?
Well, no, she eats cheese. That's right.
Okay.
So cheese is okay.
Yes.
And this, it's easy for her and some people because they don't have, like my wife doesn't have a sweet tooth. And so she's been able to just be on this diet all the time. Now, the most interesting health story of the day, I think, you know about this Blue Zone book, this guy Dan Buettner. He's an explorer, a National Geographic fellow, and the author of The Blue Zone Kitchen, 100 Recipes to Live to 100. He has studied the Blue Zones. These are the areas of the planet where people live the longest and stay healthy for the longest. And he decided to try to figure out what they all have in common. And basically, the thing they have in common is a lot of social interaction. They don't work out at gyms, but they do manual labor. And let me get to this here. In this town in Greece, and let's see, Vivian, you know how to pronounce all these Greek terms correctly, right? Ikaria, is that right? Is that the town?
That's Ikaria, yep.
Oh, I like the way you say that. In that town where people greet one another on the street with the saying, Akantanas? Am I close?
You're close.
It means I'll see you when you're 100. The most important step on your journey to a healthy 100 years, according to this author, might be to start eating like they do in the Blue Zones. And basically, it's kind of a Mediterranean diet. So, again, it's social interaction, and the other things these people have in common are just working, walking, running, not sitting in traffic for hours, and basically living the way we did before all the modern conveniences.
No stress.
That's right.
And a lot of wine.
Well, that helps. Yeah, that helps.
Now for some more news. Ready?
Welcome to the Top 666.
What?
On the Steve Cochran Show.
That is great radio.
This is your first look at what people, animals, and assorted fruits and vegetables will be talking about today.
Are these in any particular order? Okay. Lyft has launched a monthly subscription service nationwide that has better airport access, surprise offers, and a 15% discount on all rides. The Lyft Pink initiative will cost users $19.99 a month. Both Uber and Lyft have introduced monthly subscription services in the past year and a half. Well, the poor cab drivers, that's all I got to say. A new rule finalized by the Trump administration will tighten work requirements for food stamp recipients and potentially cancel benefits for more than 100,000 people in Illinois. The nationwide move announced yesterday targets able-bodied adults receiving supplemental nutrition assistance program benefits that are under 50 who don't have any children or dependents. Work is set to begin this month on a 1.5 million square foot office tower alongside Union Station after the developers landed a $476 million construction loan BMO Tower will be under construction once demolition of a parking garage is completed on the site at 320 South Canal Street. You know, if you haven't been downtown in a while and you start driving around, do you play this game? Wait a minute, where'd that come from? What was that before? I thought it was a parking lot. You know, it used to be they replaced buildings with parking lots. Now they're replacing parking lots with buildings.
By the way, yes, and glance over at some point, glance over your right shoulder once the sun comes up and behind the Swiss Hotel where the big tower is going up to. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, one of the great things about Chicago historically, unlike New York, we weren't in canyons here downtown. There's sky and open space. It's kind of changing, isn't
it?
Am I sounding like my father now? I think so. A lawmaker in New Jersey has introduced a bill requiring elementary schools in the state to teach students how to read and write in cursive by the end of third grade. Cursive was dropped as a requirement under Common Core standards in 2010. Many schools across the region opt not to include cursive in their curriculum. In 2017, Illinois lawmakers passed legislation mandating cursive. Man, my mom and my dad actually had great handwriting. I don't know what happened to me. And I don't know if anybody writes anymore. I was talking about this
kids
the other day.
They all print.
And of course, we send email now. And I have some emails from famous people. And back in the day, maybe you'd get an actual letter and you'd save it because it was from somebody well known. What are you supposed to do now? You're supposed to print an email that you want to save, and that's historic?
Good point.
I don't think so. McDonald's coffee bean remnants are getting a second purpose in life in the form of car parts. Researchers from Ford are using McDonald's coffee chaff, which is the waste left over after the roasting process, to make headlamp housings and other auto opponents. Ford started production this month using the coffee skin on new models of its Lincoln Continental. Listen very closely. Listen, that sound? That is Ray Kroc turning over in his grave. The Postal Service kicked off the 107th year of Operation Santa yesterday at the Postal Service's downtown headquarters. It's a program where post office customers can browse and adopt letters children write addressed to Santa Claus. The program started in 1912 when the department began receiving letters addressed to Santa customers. Addressed to Santa, period. We'll edit this out when our show is broadcast. Customers in Chicago can adopt letters in person and online. The office processed 5,000 letters out of Chicago last year. We've done this in the past. It used to be able to go down to the main post office and select letters. But at any rate, however you do it, it's fantastic because you get to help some needy family, somebody who's addressed a letter to Santa. It's not always kids who write those letters, too. So it's a great way. You know how sometimes with a charity, you're not sure. You want to know about where the money's going, and you hope every dollar goes to the right cause. This is a great way to personally help somebody during this holiday season.
Yeah, we've done that too, and some of the stories, so you read some of the letters and you can go through them and find one that really appeals to you. Some of them are heartbreaking.
They really, really are, and it's a great feeling to be able to help somebody like that and to know that you've done something. There's no middle person. It's a great thing.
Yeah, my family and I are doing a Giving Tree shopping this Saturday. We're getting together as a group to do some Giving Tree shopping.
And you know what? After the holidays, it's still okay to be nice, isn't it? I believe it is.
I think so.
All right. Here's the big production closer now for this Top 6 at 6.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Far be it from me to correct a longstanding Steve Cochran show policy, but shouldn't the Top 6 at 6... shouldn't it be on at 6 instead of 6:18? I don't know. If you're just joining us, this is the new format of WGN, just complaining about things. It's Bob Surratt with you. Hang on 1 second.
Quite a slurp.
Hard to believe, isn't it, that this is the guy WGN management has entrusted to its all-important morning drive show. Steve Cochran will be back on Monday. I now know why all those years Marianne and I were doing Fox Thing in the Morning, I had trouble because I never drank coffee back then. And I still don't like coffee because it stunts my growth. I like tea, but when you are up at this hour, you got to have some coffee to get going. So all those years, and I think it was like 7 years doing that show in the morning from 7 to 9, I never could wake up properly because I didn't drink coffee. I didn't drink tea. What was the matter with me? Why didn't somebody tell me that? It's much easier when you have some stimulation, isn't it? Green tea, that's my choice. Is there green tea here in the Flush WGN?
There's some by the kitchen in a little bowl. There's some tea in there. And I do have regular tea. I have to have caffeine, though. Have to.
Green is the healthiest, they say.
I know. Just not the best tasting, though.
Well, no, that's true. To follow up on that Blue Zone diet, where the people in certain sections of the earth live longer and what they all have in common, it's a plant-based diet. The superagers nourish their bodies with whole plant-based foods such as leafy vegetables, fibers, nuts, beans, whole grains. They eat meat fewer than 5 times monthly. So that's the thing that healthy octogenarians have in common. Beans, grains, and garden vegetables. All the things we love. Although, as I have pointed out from time to time, when you hear those stories about contaminated romaine lettuce and various salad ingredients that have some poisonous substance on them, it's never hot dogs, never beef, never ribs, never pizza. It's always the salad items that cause problems. Yeah, just a little thing to think about. It's the Steve Cochran Show with Bob Surratt this morning. And let's see, what's coming up? Oh, we're going to be talking to Chuck Todd of Meet the Press. Get the latest on what he sees as the headline from yesterday's hearings and what's going to be the headline today. What's the deal on your smart TV? Is it spying on you? Lots of sales this time of year. Big bargains on those television sets. But there may be a problem with somebody watching you because that can happen with those new television sets. We'll get to that and Chuck Todd right after we bring you up to date on everything that's happening today. And the great thing about WGN Radio is you can just press a button and say, good morning, Chuck Todd. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Good morning.
Well, let me just say this before we get into it. I now recognize the gentle host of NBC's Meet the Press. Sorry, I've been watching the hearings a little too much.
That's all right. You have to just assume everybody knows everybody's audio.
What was the headline from yesterday for you, Chuck? And give us a little prediction of what today's headline will be.
Well, look, the most substantive thing we learned yesterday from the impeachment hearings is that the House Democrats plan on adding the Mueller report to one of their articles, or at least that seems to be what they were trying to make clear yesterday. I mean, obviously, there was the point of the hearings was to have the constitutional, you know, to Democrats trying to make their case that yes, indeed, that the things that they have found that the president did wrong met the impeachment standard. Three scholars saying yes, one dissenting. I don't know if the hearing itself did much to add anything. I think the Republicans, you know, it may not matter. I don't think they helped themselves by bringing on a law professor who essentially had the exact opposite rationale for the Bill Clinton impeachment. It just seems like he has created a legal theory based on a partisan rationale. And I mean, when you compare what he testified to in '98 to what he testified to yesterday, it's literally it is the opposite meaning of each. Of each one. However, I do think the case that the Republican law professor the Republicans invited, Jonathan Turley, made about the investigation not being done yet, I think it's the best case Republicans can make to say, slow down, Democrats. You're not done. And the fact is, they're not done. There are a lot of leads. Now, they may not be done because the president's obstructing or the White House isn't, you know, providing the documents that can help them finish this investigation. But that is an uncomfortable reality.
Yeah, you know what? I consider myself a news junkie, and I've been watching closely through all this. But I have to admit, yesterday I was glazing over a little bit. I did enjoy Professor Turley. Is that his name? I thought a lot of what he said made for some good common sense. Which, as my dad used to say, common sense not too common. But for the most part, it was kind of hard to stay with it. And I'm thinking if I have a hard time staying.
I don't know if it was intended. I don't buy that those hearings did much of for. My assumption is that people that watched it already have an idea of what they'd like to see happen. Right? There wasn't. You're not getting anybody in there going, you know, I'm just not sure where I'd sit here in this impeachment story. Let me see what a constitutional scholar will tell me. Right? You know.
Yeah.
I think in that case sense, they're on the fence. But I think the arguments did matter more to the members of Congress. Look, we're going to hear from Nancy Pelosi in about an hour on impeachment. She's going to do an update. And I think what I'm curious about is this, and this is where there is a divide inside the House Democrats, which is, should the Mueller report be a part of their impeachment or not? It was clear yesterday that Nadler wants to make it a part of the impeachment. Not everybody in the House Democratic Conference wants to include Mueller in the impeachment. So I wonder if she makes some news, some form, on sort of what will be the parameters of the articles and what won't be.
And are we going to be hearing Rudy Giuliani's name a lot more today in breaking news?
I guess. I mean, I cannot believe that in the middle of all this, and I'm sure his lawyer who's representing him must be just, you know, at their wit's end, because no lawyer would recommend. You're under investigation right now over weird contacts in Ukraine, so fly to Hungary and Ukraine in the middle of that investigation to do some weird documentary series for a cable channel no one's ever heard of. You know, it is just a bizarre turn of events. I mean, the Rudy Giuliani spectacle in all of this, if it wasn't so serious, it would be comical.
Well, you know what?
It could be serious and comical.
who knows? I want to talk to you a little bit about how we might ever get back to normal, and comparing this to the Watergate era. Can you yield back for a couple of minutes here, Chuck Todd, and then we'll get back to.
I will yield back my time until we take a quick humanitarian break.
That's it. It's actually
that was my favorite phrase of yesterday. Yeah,
it's actually a weather and traffic break, Steve.
Forecast today.
Humanitarian. Yeah,
exactly.
Bob Surratt, radio host du jour, back with NBC's Chuck Todd, host of Meet the Press, which is on MSNBC seemingly all the time, and of course Sunday mornings here on Channel 5. Chuck, long term, I'd like to get your take on this. How do we ever get back to a normal state of political discourse and intelligent, respectful debate? I mean, at least with a modicum of bipartisan activity, what's it going to take to sort of start clearing out of this divisive time we're in?
Well, you know, I was asked if I spoke to a journalism class students a couple days ago in South Carolina, and was asked a similar question. It was more about sort of on the media front, but sort of media polarization, but the polarization question in general. And you sit there and you realize, look, we in the press, we're reactionary, right? We cover what is happening, and then there are, you know, sort of partisan members of the press corps that perhaps react to what is happening. It's got to come from the democracy, meaning the public has to vote it out. The fact of the matter is, and I think that the uncomfortable truth is that we vote this in. If we didn't like it, then we would start voting it out. I mean, we say we want bipartisanship, yet we vote along partisan lines, right? People say they don't vote by party, but it's pretty obvious most people do. So I hate to say this. It's got to come from two places. One, the president, a president can set a tone, all right? This president sets one tone. Another president can set another tone. I think that helps. But I think ultimately, if the public is tired of it, then they should stop voting for it in some way. So I actually think one of the things that's necessary to sort of break this logjam here is I think the two parties, we've never been more, it's so funny, the two parties have never been weaker, and yet party identification, ideological identification has never been stronger. I'd love to see both parties break up completely and see what would we'd still have a left and a right here, but I think it would reform in a better way that might actually then produce sort of a normal atmosphere again. I just think both the Democratic Party in name and the Republican Party in name are just sort of a mess. They don't really stand for anything other than the color of a jersey right now. There's no real philosophies anymore behind it, right? You know, there's something missing there, more so on the right side, but you see it on the left side. I'd love to see a fracturing of both parties and see what would rebuild in its place. Because I think if you did that, then maybe you'd have, if you had more coalition building for different issues, then you might tone down the hot rhetoric. If people realize they had to work with you on economic issues, even as they worked against you on foreign policy issues, that could tone down the rhetoric.
During Watergate, I don't remember the kind of polarization we have today, where families have to avoid the subject of politics when they get together. Why is that? Is it because of Donald?
I have a theory. We only had three news channels.
Yeah, right.
And you know, it look, I could keep. I don't want to burn up 30 minutes on this topic, but the fact of the matter is, when you had a broadcast that you knew you were representing 40, you were talking to 20 to 30 million people. The people that produced the broadcast knew they had to basically provide the broadest, sort of widest lens perspective. As people started to peel off and decide at 6:30 at night, you know what, I don't want to watch the news, I want to watch the weather. I don't want to watch the news, I want to watch sports. I want to watch this, I want to watch that. Well, then news was starting to be made for actual news junkies. Okay, it used to be the news was made for everybody, whether you liked watching it or not. But as soon as the news started being produced primarily for people who wanted to watch the news, that's when it started getting narrower and narrower and narrower. And now we're in our tribal situation that we're in.
Yes, we are. That's the gavel.
There's your gavel. Am I out of time? I'll yield back.
Yes, right. The gentle host of Meet the Press, NBC's Chuck Todd's time has expired. We'll be watching you on MTP Daily on MSNBC and, of course, Sunday morning, Channel 5, Meet the Press. Thank you, Chuck.
Appreciate it.
Have a good day. It's 6:52, and is your smart TV watching you? Did you hear about this? The FBI is warning that the tables are turning. Hackers may be able to take over your smart TV to spy on you, and that's not the only thing to be worried about. That's right. Spy stories used to be the kind of thing we watched on TV, and now the tables are turning. Smart TVs were a big hit on Black Friday and Cyber Monday. So the FBI is actually warning the public that screens with advanced technology could become the playground for hackers. According to this research, at the low end of the risk spectrum, they can change channels, play with the volume, and show your kids inappropriate videos. In a worst-case scenario, they can turn on your bedroom television's camera and microphone and silently cyber-stalk you, because in these new sets, there are cameras and microphones built in. So get the black tape out and cover up those spots.
I was already worried about my Amazon Echo. Now I got to worry about that too.
Exactly. Smart TVs have those microphones often on your remote, because you can control the set with your voice. So there's a microphone there. And the experts say the microphone is always on and always listening. The security and privacy ramifications of that are huge, and many consumers just don't realize how much data they're giving up to use these new features. A Consumer Report investigation found millions of smart TVs had security flaws, and it's not just hackers that could be after your information. They found that many devices automatically send data to Amazon, Facebook, and Netflix. So here's what you can do. If you're not comfortable with all that, check your TV's settings. On some models, you can turn off something called viewer information services, and you can also disable the microphone or put black tape over the camera, which is the low-tech option to protect your privacy. And it's a good thing I lead a boring life, because I'm not worried about any of this. Let them see me. I'm not doing anything. It's the Steve Cochran program, and this caught my eye today. I heard about this the other day, and there's a big Tribune story about Tom Boyle. Now, if I say Tom Boyle, Dave Ennett, does that name mean anything to you, Tom Boyle?
Tom Boyle.
I can tell you one thing. You have passed his establishment many, many times over the years. Tom Boyle and his shop yesterday on Addison Street.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. Yes, I did hear this.
Yeah, Tom passed away at the age of 88. He opened that store in 1976, and it always looked like it was caving in. The roof was kind of slanted, and it was a memorabilia shop. He opened it in 1976. It became a fixture in the neighborhood. It's still open, and I think some family members are going to keep it going for a while, but they say it will close for good by next July, if not sooner. Tom Boyle owned the building and the game day parking lot for Wrigley Field behind it, and for several years, what Boyle had earned from parking was primarily supporting his little yesterday vintage shop. He's an interesting guy, though. I mean, where is this here? Page 2. Good day. Tom, I still miss Paul Harvey. Where is this? Because he had a fascinating background. I mean, you'd see him in there, and you'd see the shop. And
are you reading the newspaper? Look at you.
Yeah, it's old school.
People still
it's
do
old
that?
School,
it's a
Mary.
Sound we haven't heard on this station
I know.
In a long
People
time.
People are going, what's that?
Boyle, who never married or had children, was born in 1931, grew up on the West Side, went to St. Mel. In East Garfield Park, and in the 50s, he started an alternative newspaper at the school. He enrolled in Northwestern University to launch a career in journalism, but after a year, he had to leave to care for his ailing mother. He served in the Army and was stationed in South Korea. Afterward, he took sales jobs, roaming door-to-door, peddling vacuums and brushes in the Saturday Evening Post. He thought of himself as a long-simmering writer and occasionally worked as an actor, but mainly he was a collector. So Tom Boyle, rest in peace. He passed away at the age of 88. His store on Addison Street, we all saw it, called Yesterday. And a nice piece by Christopher Borelli in the Tribune today. It's coming up on 3 minutes before 7 o'clock, and we're going to play a game that I love to play whenever I'm on the radio or television. It's called Trash or Treasure. And you've got the stuff in your house. Maybe it's junk. Well, I'm sure your wife calls it junk. Maybe it's not. What's it worth, some of that memorabilia? Old autographed baseballs or baseball cards or posters. We've got a guy who will tell us if you have anything valuable. And coming up after 7, you'll be able to call us and ask some questions and find out if what you've got is trash or treasure. Make a note of our phone number, which is also the text number here on the Steve Cochran Show, 312-981-7200. And let's get back to the newsroom for just a quick second because of a bit of business news that's somewhat of a surprise, isn't it, Steve?
It is, just a little bit of a surprise. United CEO Oscar Munoz is resigning. He's stepping down as chief executive officer, turning the day-to-day management duties over to UAL President Scott Kirby, who will become the CEO of the company. There had been some rumors recently that maybe Munoz would step aside, but now we see that this is actually happening, and we'll have more as this we fill out some of the details of this as the morning goes along.
Thank you, sir. It's Bob Surratt with you this morning, acting human alarm clock. Steve Cochran will return on Monday. Let's get to what you have there in the house, in the attic, in the basement. Do you have some old souvenirs from Sox games or Cubs games, or maybe some Bears or Bulls paraphernalia? Well, we've got the guy with us this morning who can tell us if it's trash or treasure, Scott Beatty. Good morning, Scott. How you doing?
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. Scott is the proprietor of AU Sports in Morton Grove on Dempster. It's Chicago's oldest and best sports memorabilia store. been around for almost 40 years. They have autograph signings there, over 5 million sports cards in stock. They buy and sell. And Scott kind of knows what's going on in the resale market, in the memorabilia market. And we're going to open this up to you if you have a question about something you have at home. First, though, Scott, in general, what's hot and what's not these days?
Well, everything goes in cycles, right? Right now, it's always going to be the newer players are always going to be the hot thing on the market because they're new. Nobody has it already. Right now in basketball, it's the number one draft pick, Zion Williamson. In football right now, as you might expect, it's Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson. So everything goes in cycles like that. The stuff that stays consistent over years and years and years is really the older stuff.
Are people still bringing in the baseball cards that their parents didn't throw out? Are there still some of those around, and are they worth anything?
Absolutely. Anything like pre-1970, let's just say, to give it a basis, if it's in really great condition, there is a strong market for these cards. You're talking about if it's your parents' stuff from the 50s or 60s, and you've got Mickey Mantle and Roberto Clemente and guys like that, 100%.
And when you have an autographed baseball or an autographed football or a basketball or a hockey stick, does the autograph always make it more valuable?
Yeah, I mean, unless you're getting signed, you know, the Babe Ruth's 714th home run ball by somebody else. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, an autograph, and I'll tell this for autograph people, a lot of them don't realize that they think that the more autographs on a piece, the better. Well, that doesn't always hold true. I mean, if you're going to get, say, the 85 Bears all on one piece, that's great. But if you're going to get Chicago Bears from several different teams on a ball, it might not be worth as much as you think it is. Usually it's single signed pieces.
And do people, even though you're a sports store, AU Sports there on Dempster, do people show up with movie posters and show business memorabilia as well? And what do you tell them about that?
Well, I know a little bit about it. Most of that stuff I have to see in person, but we have sold Hollywood memorabilia. I've done lots of consignment deals on, I did toys, I've done magazines. We do have a sister store that does comic and comic-related memorabilia. So we can cover a lot of things. The only things we don't really delve into, coins and stamps.
Well, let's find out what people have in their house or basement or attic. You want to know whether it's trash or treasure? We'll take a quick break, and then Scott can answer your questions. 312-981-7200. That's the number to call. Is it trash? Is it treasure? 312-981-7200. 717, back with Scott Beatty, owner of AU Sports Memorabilia in Morton Grove. Scott, you ready to play trash or treasure with our friends out there?
Bring them on, Bobby.
Okay, here we go. First up, it's Bill from Elgin. What do you got, Bill?
I got a Wheaties box from the first Bulls championship with all six of the guys' signatures on the front.
Trash or treasure? Sounds like a treasure, Scott.
Sounds like a treasure if the autographs are authentic. Okay. I would go ahead and I would have either one of the leading authentication companies, either PSA or Beckett, have a look at that. It's just going to add to the value. But if you've got the starting six on that box, that's a really nice piece.
So would we be talking about hundreds of dollars on that one?
Yeah, easily.
Okay. All right. Good luck, Bill. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. And here's Al from Plainfield. Hi, Al.
Hey there. I've got two throwback hockey sweaters. Two of them are signed by Bobby Hull with the HOF, and I think it's 84. And I got one that's signed by Phil Esposito with the Hall of Fame signature on the back over the number, in the number with the HOF on it. What would those be worth?
Well, here's the thing. Both of those guys have been very consistent signers over their careers and past. I mean, Bobby, when he hit the Hawks game, is basically paid to sign anything you put in front of him. Phil is also a team ambassador for the Bruins. That means there's a lot of their stuff out there. Their jerseys generally sell, signed jerseys of Hall and Esposito will sell anywhere from $100 to $300, depending on the jersey, style of autograph, and the authentication.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Al. Have a great day. Appreciate you listening and calling. Hi, Tony in Schaumburg. How you doing?
Hi, pretty good. Tony Nosey calling from Schaumburg. I have two baseballs, one with Ron Santo and Ernie Banks, and the other one's just Ernie Banks.
These are autographed baseballs?
Yes, sir.
All right, Scott?
Ernie and Ron were two more guys who signed a lot. Now, the plus on this is both are always in a pretty decent demand. Both of them have reached the point of, like, legendary Cub status. So there's always somebody who's looking for those balls. I can give you a rough estimate on those. Santo and Banks sell for around $150, give or take.
There you go,
great,
Tony.
Thank you. You want to buy it?
you give me a call at the store or email us, and I'll be sure to take a look at them. Yeah, we can deal.
AU Sports in Morton Grove on Dempster, Tony. Here's Cindy, Trash or Treasure. You're on, Cindy.
Hi, guys. I know it's not really sports related, but I do have a Levi's jean jacket that has Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom on it, which was given to my uncle by Steven Spielberg for, like, the crew set jackets that they used to wear on the set because my uncle designed his studios.
So it's a rare bit of memorabilia, isn't it, Scott? What do you think?
Yeah, not super my point of expertise, but I do realize what it is. Generally, pieces like that are given out on movie sets, they make a lot of them to give to the crew and so on. I've done a few rock and roll tour jackets that were similar types. I would say it's probably worth a few $100, though, at least.
Well, that would be great. And by the way, rock on Morton Grove Pequod's Pizza. It's the best.
Okay, there. I wish I had the old bell for a plug. Okay, there's Cindy and Aurora. Here is Craig in Elgin. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning. Hi, how are you doing? I have an autographed book, George Halas's book, autographed by George Halas, that I had picked up at a library book sale, I would say, about 10 years ago.
Scott?
Okay. You're talking about Halas by Halas?
Yeah, it just says Best Wishes, George Halas on it.
No, I'm saying the book is the Halas by Halas.
Yeah, yes, it is, yes.
Okay. This one I would absolutely ask you to get authenticated just to be 100% sure. It wouldn't be the first time somebody signed the inside of a book for their own purposes. But, yeah, this one could be worth a few $100 as well. George Halas's autograph is always in demand and brings a nice price.
There you go.
Okay.
Good luck, Craig.
Thank you very much.
Here's Sue Ann from Northern Indiana. What's up, Sue Ann?
Hi, good morning. We have an autographed poster from Walter Payton that my husband personally obtained. It was either in the late 70s or early 80s. He was at a trade show in Chicago. And it's an autographed poster from Walter Payton. He's leaning up against a Lamborghini. And if I remember right, it's an advertisement actually for tennis shoes, like K-Roo shoes, I believe is what it was.
Mm-hmm. Trash or treasure.
My husband actually, yep.
Go ahead, Scott.
This is a poster or more like an 8x10?
It's a poster.
Okay. I believe I know the pose you're talking about, and he did do promotional material for Ruse.
Right.
I would say, now Walter is another one. His price stays up simply because he's in such high demand. He signed a ton of stuff. For a poster, it's going to be a little tougher to move. I would say it's going to, without seeing it, I would say it's probably worth between $75 to $175.
Okay. Life and curious.
Is that what you thought it would be worth, Sue Ann?
We had no idea. We just treasured ourselves, and we just always wondered if there's any value to it. So this is great.
All right. Have a good day. Thanks for calling.
There's always going to be value to a Walter Payton autograph, Bob. I mean, that is the guy.
Sure. Mary and Elmhurst, it's your turn. Go ahead, Mary.
Okay. Good morning, guys. I have a signed picture of Joakim Noah, large action shot of a photo framed in glass. Trash or treasure?
Yeah, unfortunately, locally, Joakim Noah has reached the status of "What have you done for me lately?" his market is just not there locally. If it's a larger 11x14, 16x20,
you might find it retail for, honest to goodness, $35,
$40. Wow. Oh, wow.
That's down in the low zone of a Bob Sherratt autograph. My goodness.
Not quite trash, but not treasure.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thank you so much.
All right, here's Candace in Chicago Ridge. Hey, Candace.
Good morning. How are you?
All right, what's going on?
I have a Blackhawks jersey signed by Patrick Kane.
All right, Scott.
Now we're talking. Yeah, Kane is actually the most popular Blackhawk of the last, I don't know, 20 years at least. He's always in good demand. A lot of autographs on jerseys depend on the jerseys. Are they, you know, pro style? Are they knockoff jerseys? Are they letters signed on, etc.?
Ike's jersey.
Yeah, but if a retail on Kane, you're talking $250, $300.
Okay. I also have a $50 bill signed by Walter Payton.
That's worth $50. We know that, Scott.
At least. You could probably double up on that.
Okay. All right. There you go. It's a treasure. And Scott, in general, how does an autograph get authenticated?
Well, actually, the company that we partner up with is called Beckett. A lot of people may be familiar with them. They, for many years, produced the main sports price guides, and they've gotten into the authentication business. And Steve Grad is the leading authenticator with them. Some people may know him from Fosters. We have used them for the last couple of years. You can do it, too. In fact, we've got an authentication process coming up at the end of the month. So if anybody is interested in getting their pieces authenticated, they can do it through us. You simply contact me via email or call. But I would always say go with Beckett or the other company I prefer is PSA, either one of them. They have the experts to determine whether your autograph is good or not. And it will always help your resale value if that's what you decide to do.
We had a lot of folks texting us as well. Let me get in a couple of those quickly from 815. I have a Bears flag autographed by Hampton, Butler, Ditka, Singletary, and Butkus. What's the value of that?
You know, I would say it's probably in the low three figures simply because, again, we talked about the difference of teams. Like, Butkus is the odd man out on that autograph. Even though it's a great autograph to have, it kind of distracts from the piece. But with five good players like that on it, I would say, you know, $100, $125.
One more from 708. I have Joe DiMaggio's autograph on a Chicago police ticket book. My father-in-law was on the force, and he had him sign his ticket book. What's that worth?
Gee, well, did he pay the fine, first of all?
Yeah, we don't know. We don't have that information.
Yeah. Well, generally, a DiMaggio autograph starts at $100. So with such a unique item, I don't really know how high that would go. You'd have to find the absolute right buyer for something like that. But it is a super unique piece, and I'm not going to ever distract from a Joe DiMaggio autograph. They're always good.
And finally, I would guess this would be really valuable from 260. I have a signed baseball from Don Larsen after he pitched his perfect game. My dad got it signed for me as a kid. It has his signature in a note. And the interesting thing about this is he signed a National League ball, a Don Larsen autograph ball. Scott, what do you think? Trash or treasure? It's got to be a big treasure.
No, you think so. But no, Don Larsen signed a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, okay.
There's no hitter balls of Larsen all over the place. And also the fact that he signed it on a National League ball rather than an American League ball is a huge mistake.
Wow, interesting. So it's all about what's rare and what's not. And if you want more information, contact Scott Beatty. He's at AU Sports Memorabilia on Dempster in Morton Grove. Let's play Trash or Treasure again soon. It's always fun. Thank you, Scott.
You are always welcome, Bob.
And we shall return after this. Steve Cochran Show, and I believe it's an FCC requirement that every TV and radio broadcast, certainly news programs, have to have holiday tips. And here are my tips to you during this holiday season. First of all, even though traffic may be bad right now where you are, and you may see some crazy driving, the most dangerous place to be, I believe, a parking lot, a shopping mall parking lot, use extra care. And if you want to get back at people who aggravate you behind the wheel, try my trick. When you're walking around a parking lot, a crowded parking lot, walk around, and if you're feeling lonely during the holidays, walk around with your key out in your hand, just holding your key in your hand like you're going to your car, and just take note of the number of people, number of cars that follow you wherever you go. And maybe that'll make you feel better in the parking lot. That's one of my holiday tips. And here's another holiday tip.
Looks like you're going to stab them then.
In the Surratt household, I noticed in the mailbox yesterday the first greeting cards of the season, the first holiday cards, Christmas cards.
Yes, I got my first one yesterday, too.
All right, well, finally. Stop it with the cards, and here's why.
What?
Yeah, listen to me. Listen
Grinch.
To me, Mary. You know, this time of year, you get all the catalogs, more junk mail than ever, and then you get these cards, and in many cases, people spend some money on these cards. They think about what they're going to write. They're thoughtful. They spend a lot of time sending these. And then as it gets closer to Christmas and New Year, they get thrown out quickly. Sometimes you don't even look at them, or you look at them for 1 second and toss them.
Not in my house.
They don't make an impact. Really? They don't.
I hang my pictures on the wall for 6 months. Into, like, Christmas in July. Because people send beautiful family photos, you know, that they get to us. So I send them, and I keep them up on the wall, and I put the cards, I arrange them in a little, you know, design on my wall.
You're
as well,
in the minority.
And hang them. But the cards I take down after Christmas.
Most people.
Not the pictures.
Most people do not look at them for a long time or save them. So I say, send your holiday cards in July, because if it's the middle of summer and you get a card from someone saying best wishes, hope you're having a healthy, happy new year, it'll really make an impact, and it won't get lost in the holiday mess. So send your holiday cards in July. I fully endorse that idea.
A summer greeting card.
A summer greeting card.
That's interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll get a lot of pictures of people in their bathing suits, though, on the beach and
well,
stuff.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah, you like that.
It's my holiday tip.
Some you don't want to see.
Yeah, that's right. Coming up, we'll have an entertainment report for you, and we've got some news about Jeopardy, Project Runway, some interesting movies opening this weekend, and an unlikely couple, Howard Stern and Hillary Clinton. More on that on the way. And we have some entertainment news to pass along to you. And what's that, Joe? Sorry.
Oh, we're just calling her now.
Oh, okay. Getting some messages from the control tower. We're going to check in with Tracy Swartz of the Chicago Tribune. Let me press her button there. Hi, Tracy. Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things in the entertainment news today. First, give us a Jeopardy update. I haven't watched the show in a long time, but people are talking about a Chicagoan, right?
Well, it's been a big year for Jeopardy in Chicago area. I mean, Jeopardy James from Naperville, he did really well this year, and it sort of spawned a lot of local Jeopardy news. We had a woman who did really well, Alex Famish. She lives in Chicago. She's originally from Northbrook, and she went on a three-day run. Last week, we had a Naperville receptionist, Beth Stewart, who was on a two-day run. So we've had a lot of vocal Jeopardy love lately. We have a guy on today. His name is Chris. He's also from Chicago. So just a lot of local people doing really well on Jeopardy.
Yeah, and now I don't. Do you know what the schedule is? How they work that? I mean, I know they tape them, and then are the contestants sworn to secrecy? How does that work? Do you know?
They are. So Alex, her run started playing on Thanksgiving Day. It ended on Tuesday, and she taped the show September 25th, and then she came back and taped the rest of the episodes October 1st.
And on this Project Runway story, there are three Chicago designers on the new season. And tell us a little bit about that. Now, it seems like everybody used to watch Project Runway, but it's popular again. Is that true?
Well, Project Runway was very popular when it first came out in 2004. And then it moved
network, from the Bravo TV network to Lifetime network. And so the fans, some people didn't make the switch, but now it's back on the Bravo network. We're already up to season 18. And we do have three designers from Chicago, which is the most the show has ever had. It premieres tonight. It's very exciting to watch these three Chicago designers. They're great. And, you know, it's on every week from now, at least through the beginning of next year.
So if the Bears don't look very good by halftime, people will be switching over to that show. And this weekend, I know a lot of good movies are opening up. We saw the Mr. Rogers movie recently, and I thought it was fantastic. And I'm really looking forward to the movie that's called, I think, what's it called? Dirty Waters, Mark Ruffalo movie. What do you got on your list, Tracy?
Well, I know the Aeronauts is opening this weekend at the Music Box. It's got Eddie Redmayne, Felicity Jones. It's about a balloon flight, two scientists in a balloon that disappeared teeth from the 1800s. They're up on the Music Box, and then it's going to be on Amazon Prime. A locally shot movie, Girl on the Third Floor, CM Punk, local guy, local wrestler, who's shot here in the Chicago area. That also opens up in Music Box, and it's already on Amazon Prime. It's about a Chicago area home renovation that goes horribly awry.
Have you seen anything that you liked lately, Tracy? Did you see the Mr. Rogers movie, the Tom Hanks film?
I didn't. I actually just had a baby like 14 weeks ago, so my ability to watch movies is not so good lately. But we did tune into The Irishman, which just dropped on Netflix last week. My husband watched all of it. I have to admit, I only watched parts of it and really enjoyed it. The de-aging process of De Niro kind of freaks me out a little bit, but when I have time and not a screaming newborn, I will sit and watch that movie in full.
With a new baby, you can catch up at least on all the streaming services. People either seem to love The Irishman and they rave about all 3+ hours, or they hate it. Doesn't seem to be any in between.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I guess it's finding a block of time just to be able to sit down and watch a 3-hour movie. I think for some people that time was over the Thanksgiving weekend. You could watch with your family, or maybe you could use it to avoid them.
Tracy Swartz, Chicago Tribune. Okay, well, welcome back to the world after the baby, Tracy. Good luck and enjoy the family this holiday season.
Thank you. You too.
And another item that I don't know if you want to put this in entertainment news, but people are really talking about this, and it's trending on social media. For about 2.5 hours yesterday on satellite radio, Howard Stern interviewed Hillary Clinton. And they got her in there because she's promoting the book that she wrote with Chelsea. And I think that's the book about the women she admires, I think, right? And she said a couple of interesting things in the interview. First, let's listen to a little bit of Hillary Clinton on Bernie.
Do we hate Bernie Sanders?
No, I don't hate anybody.
Bernie could have endorsed you quicker.
He could have. He hurt me. There's no doubt about it. He hurt me. But going back to the indictments, because that's what's really important.
Have you ever spoken to Bernie about that?
No. No.
You haven't talked to him?
I don't talk to him. Yeah, I mean, we did when he finally endorsed me and all that.
But you're upset with him?
No, disappointed. Disappointed. Okay. So, and I hope he doesn't do it again to whoever gets the nomination.
Right.
Once is enough.
They got a little personal, too, in the interview when Howard Stern was asking about the initial meeting between Hillary and Bill Clinton.
We're walking out, and he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to register for classes for next year." And he goes, "Oh, I'll go, too." So we walk. And, you know, those are the old days when, you know, you actually had to use pencil and paper to register for things.
Right.
And so I stand in line. I get up to the registrar. Bill and I are talking, our first real conversation. And the registrar looks at me and goes, "Bill, what are you doing here? You registered this morning." And so I knew that this was all about, you know, getting to know me.
Right.
Then we went on about a 5-hour date where we took a walk. We get to the Yale Art Museum and they have a Mark Rothko exhibit. And I said, "Oh, I didn't. I missed that. I wish I'd seen it," because the museum was closed because it was on strike.
Right.
So Bill said, "Why, you really like Rothko?" I said, "Yeah, I really like him. I've never seen his stuff in person, but I've seen, you know, photographs." He goes, "Well, stay here just a minute." So he goes off. This guy I've just met. He comes back. He introduces me to this gentleman. He goes, "This is, you know, John the janitor." And John the janitor said he'll let us in if we pick up all the trash on the lawn.
Oh, my God. Said, what an operator this
guy
is.
So we pick up the trash.
Yeah.
And then we get to go in and see the Rothkos. And then we end up in the sculpture garden.
See, this is a guy who is a born people person.
And you know what he says, which is so important? He says, everybody has a story.
There's Hillary Clinton on the Howard Stern show yesterday talking about her first encounter with Bill Clinton while they were students at Yale Law School. As is often the case, when you have candidates who lose, they really shine during a concession speech and then after the campaign is over. Hillary Clinton and Howard Stern. There you go. It's the Steve Cochran Show, and it's Bob Surratt filling in. And we will pick up the live address from Nancy Pelosi during our 8 o'clock newscast. And also coming up, we'll have breakfast with a Blackhawk, and we'll talk to the author of that Chicago Magazine piece on the bar where Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson got in trouble. I saw the story also yesterday in the Tribune, and I really thought I was aware of all these landmark eating establishments, but I'm not up to speed on the drinking establishments because, you know, I'm basically, you know, your Dairy Queen guy. But we'll get into that coming up in the 8 o'clock hour as well. It is the Steve Cochran Show. I'm Bob Surratt. I'd like to be known as a relationship manager. I was calling a credit card company yesterday to take care of some business. And they referred to themselves as a relationship manager. Hold on for a relationship manager. So I'd like to be called that today, if it's okay with everybody here. Now let's go to the newsroom, bring you up to date on everything, and we'll pick up Nancy Pelosi live momentarily. Excuse me while I use my 50,000-watt intercom here. Steve, are you still in the newsroom?
I'm still here, yep.
What was that winter storm deal you mentioned a while back?
Okay.
When is that happening?
So it looks like Tuesday into Wednesday, and one of the weather maps that we see from the Weather Center this morning is a forecast map for Tuesday, and this is at 11 o'clock p.m. Shows 2.8 inches for Chicago. So the snow disturbance coming next week into Wednesday, Tuesday into Wednesday. Of course, it's still pretty early, but it's something we wanted you to be aware of. If places north of here, up into Green Bay, Rhinelander, could get up to 8 inches to 9 inches of snow. So there's a system moving across the country that looks like it's going to brush us, but we'll keep a really close watch on it.
All right, now here's why we shouldn't feel bad about that. And I heard about this actually last night. Mrs. Surratt and I were doing a Facebook live cast, and one of our friends from Hawaii mentioned that they were getting snow there, and actually a winter storm is expected to dump more than 6 inches of snow in Hawaii at higher elevations today and tomorrow. So, you know, we're not alone here in Chicago. Coming up, we'll get to our breakfast with a Blackhawk, and defenseman Eric Gustafson will be with us. And Dave Bennett, I hope Eric doesn't mind that I want to actually question him about life in Sweden. Do we think he'll be okay with that?
I think he'll be fine with that. Sure. Is there a reason you want to know about it?
I'll tell you when we get okay. when we get to him.
Right.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that. And we'll also get in a little Blackhawks serious sports information. And Bears on everybody's mind tonight. 7:20 kickoff. Do I have that?
7:20
right?
Kick on the lakefront.
And let's see. What do we know about the Cowboys this year?
The Cowboys, I think, are a so-so team. I mean, their record would indicate they have the same record as the Bears, but they're trending the other way. The Bears won their last two games. Dallas looked bad on Thanksgiving Day at home against Buffalo. They do have the NFL's top passing attack with quarterback Dak Prescott. And, you know, they have a running back who's really good, but hasn't put up huge numbers this year in Ezekiel Elliott. And I think it's a game the Bears definitely can win, But there have been lots of games the Bears can win.
So, yeah. And which team will we see? Will we see the team that doesn't come alive until the last seconds of the first half? Do we see a Mitch Trubisky who only looks great in the hurry-up offense? You know, what's the deal on Mac? Are they? I guess if they don't put a couple of guys on him, he's very effective. But, you know. For most of the games this season, they've kind of nullified that effect.
Well, they've tried to take that away. But I think, look, if the Bears can't get amped up for this game at home in prime time, then, you know, that's kind of the story. I mean, it'll write itself tonight, you know?
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch.
It will be.
And we'll all be sleepy tomorrow morning, I guess. But actually, the 7:20 kickoff is not too bad, is it? Except
those of us who are going to the game.
Oh,
and are going to be in here tomorrow morning. Uh-huh. So it might be sleepier than us.
Mm-hmm. I used to do that. All right, let's get you caught up on what's happening out there in the sky and on the roads. Oh, by the way, if you were paying close attention and noticed that I introduced weather and traffic and then we didn't have any, we just went right to a commercial break, that's because we have a special promotion. It's called Count the Mistakes. And if you're the first person to call in, the number is 312-981-7200, and you spot a mistake, you get to talk to me. Okay, let's get to the Blackhawks and breakfast with a Blackhawk. And Eric Gustafson, the defenseman for the Blackhawks, is on the line with us. And he's in Boston. And Dave Bennett reports that it's a mom's trip. So does that mean everybody's on good behavior, Eric?
Yeah, it is. No. We flew in yesterday and had a nice dinner with all the moms. And I don't know, it was a nice time. Coming, having breakfast right now, too. So I go to the morning skate soon here.
Okay. Well, now, before we turn it over to Dave for the serious part of the interview, you're Swedish, and when did you come to the U.S., Eric?
I think it was about 5 years ago, after they won the cup there. What was it, 15, 16? Yeah.
And growing up in Sweden, is hockey really popular in Sweden?
Yeah, it is. It's that or soccer. But I think at the end here, I think hockey has been a little bit bigger than football, soccer in Sweden. I think it's a lot of kids starting hockey before they start soccer. So, yeah.
By the way, happy birthday coming up. What is it, a week or so you turn 31? Is that it?
No.
No?
No.
No? I have the wrong information?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, extra long meeting after the show. No, actually, that was my own research. Okay, well, whenever your next birthday is, happy birthday. This is a good time to turn it over to Dave.
He's a younger guy than that. You just put a few years on him there.
Oh, is that right? How old a guy are you, Eric?
I'm 27.
27. Okay. All right. Yeah. Sorry about that.
None of us want to age more quickly than we have to.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Mike from Antioch, I believe you just noticed that mistake, didn't you, Mike?
Yes, sir, Bob. How you doing?
Okay. Well, there's another mistake, too, because putting you on the line, I believe I cut off Eric. So there's two mistakes. Hold on, and we'll find a prize for you, Mike, okay? Do we have something?
All right, Bob. Hey, listen, nice listening to you again.
I appreciate that, sir. It's better when people are half awake judging me. All right. Thank you, Mike. Hold on, and Viv, can you take care of Mike and send him something? Okay. All right, now let's press Eric's button again, and I'll get out of your way, Dave Bennett. Go ahead.
At all. Hey, listen, I'm sure we have a few other things we could mess up here, but Eric, you look at the way things have gone from a health standpoint for this team over the past, well, it really seems to be over the past week or so. Do you recall a time where team got hit this hard with this many injuries and illness in a short amount of time, and what does that do to a team?
I haven't been in a team that's hit this hard with all the injuries and stuff like that, but
Forge is tough. It's guys that injured right now or has been injured. It's big guys in our group right now, and you just got to move forward though. You got to help the team to win. I think the last three games here, I don't think we have done anything like that. I think we not been tough in front of a net, and I've been solid with the puck on the lines and stuff like that. So I think we gotta help out. And, the D has to help out the goalie, and the forward has to help out the D a little bit. And it's just a team thing. And I think it's gonna turn around soon. Maybe tonight we're against Boston, they're a pretty good team to play against. But I think it's a good win if we win in here in Boston. They have 8 straight wins, so they can be something. Yeah.
Is it weird to look out there and not see Duncan Keith in one of the defensive pairings for this team? Because he's been there the whole time you've been with the Blackhawks.
Yeah, exactly. And I have played with him as a D partner. Mm-hmm. I don't know. 2 years back, so
right.
It's a little different, but it's something you have to deal with too. It's just go out there and play and try to help your team. So it's nothing you can do about it. Hope he's back soon. So
we're talking with Eric Gustafson. Eric, let me try again here. According to my spies, you are big on social media. Is it Instagram you're on all the time? Is that right?
That's not me, boys.
How about cooking? Do you cook?
No.
No? And is your secret wish to have dinner with The Rock?
No.
All of this information came from the famous legendary Harvey Wittenberg. Let me just point that out, because I play softball with Harvey, and I asked Harvey, I said, do you have any inside information on Gustafson? So he sent me that information. So,
really?
Yeah, he really did. So I don't know whether you run into Harvey, the famous Blackhawks historian and public address announcer, still with the team, but tell him that he's fired as Bob Surratt's research director, will you, Eric?
I will.
All right, thank you. Dave, anything else before we dismiss Mr. Gustafson?
Well, I think, Eric, you kind of hit the nail on the head here with this game. I mean, you guys are trying to get things going again. If you can go into Boston and do something that no other team has done this year, and that's get a win in regulation over the Boston Bruins on their ice, what would that do for you guys?
Well, they do a lot. Just like you said, I don't think they've ever been in here in Chicago, in Boston yet. So if we can do it, come here with the 2 points, or what that would do for this group, I think it's huge. Get this confidence we need back a little bit. And we play the next day after that in New York too. So if we can get tomorrow, today and tomorrow, that would be great.
Eric, have a good game tonight. Thanks for putting up with my silliness. Have a good one.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Happy 31st birthday, whenever it comes.
Yeah, can we?
He will have one later, you know.
Since my nephew Judd is going to be doing the radio play-by-play in Boston tonight, maybe I can get him to fill in for Steve Cochran here tomorrow. Maybe he would do a better job. I'm not sure. Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson is now officially retired, as you have heard. I feel bad for him. All those years of service going out this way. Not good. There's a really, really interesting piece on ChicagoMagazine.com about the place where the superintendent was drinking. And as the article points out here, when the news broke, anyone who had ever drank at Ceres, C-E-R-E-S, or even heard of it, laughed hard enough to choke on a martini olive. And we'll tell you why. We'll talk to the woman who wrote the article for Chicago Magazine about this establishment, which I have never heard of, but apparently a lot of people have, and it's quite famous, or infamous, even more so now. And we'll get to that after a quick break here. Coming up on the Steve Cochran Show, Bob Surratt, pretending to be Steve, who will be back on Monday. And we'll also check in with John Williams shortly, find out what he's got going on, his new starting time, 9 a.m. And let's see, what other old business do we have to take care of here? Phone number and text number is the same for your feedback, 312-981-7200. And let's see here. We have a minute here before we go back into the newsroom. And I knew this would happen at some point in my career. After all these years, all these decades, yes, I have finally run out of material. I have run out of things to say. And I mistimed the show because we end at 9, but I'm done now. So what am I supposed to do?
I think you're trying too hard to avoid the mistakes and give away more Lou Malnati's pizza.
Is that it? Is that what we gave that guy? A Lou Malnati's pizza? Yes, we were playing Count the Mistakes earlier. And I don't know. Well, we'll have to get a larger supply for tomorrow. Although, you know, after figuring this out today, maybe it'll be better tomorrow. Actually, what I was hoping we could do today, I was hoping that the show would be good enough so that we could just rerun it tomorrow morning so I could sleep in, but that didn't quite work out.
People will catch that.
Yeah. You think so?
Yeah, well, especially when you talk about the Bears playing tonight.
Oh, yeah, that's... Oh, yeah. Well,
I might give that
we'll
away.
We'll edit that out.
Of course.
You know, the weather won't be much different. The weather will be a little colder. Marion, the traffic would be pretty much the same, wouldn't it?
Probably. Yeah.
All right.
I think it's worth a shot.
But the same traffic. The only thing we got to worry about is sports, so...
Okay. As I mentioned, Chicago Magazine Online had a great piece that I read yesterday about the place where Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson kind of got in trouble. It's Ceres Cafe, and I thought I knew about all of the legendary Chicago establishments, but I guess I didn't know about this one. And Kate Bernot is on the line with us from Chicago Magazine. Bernot, is that how it's spelled? Okay, another one for our Count the Mistakes contest. Hey, good morning, Kate. How you doing? Let me press your button here. There we go. Kate, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Not bad. I got to tell you, you did some fantastic writing. You have a way with a phrase. Let me just read the lead paragraph of what you wrote. Ceres Cafe is not a place you drink when you have subsequent commitments. The cocktails are not merely strong, but something approaching Navy strength. The bar's sparsely windowed space inside the Chicago Board of Trade building has a casino-like effect. Its constant chatter and TVs dialed to forgettable channels, creating a warped, stupefying sense of time's passage. Chicken pot pie, turkey meatloaf, and patty melts sit heavy in the gut. All in all, Ceres is a gin-soaked lullaby. Nice writing. Nice writing,
Thank
Kate.
You.
Yeah. Now,
you can have me on anytime.
So is this a place that's basically known only to traders?
I think that must have been how it originally was. So Ceres has been there since for decades, and I think at first it was a sort of just trader's haunt. But now, more recently, you're as likely to see traders as other downtown office workers. I used to go with reporter friends of mine who also are known to like a strong drink. So the word is out, I think, about this place now.
Now, you wrote in your piece that when the news broke, anyone who ever drank at Ceres or even heard of it laughed hard enough to choke on a martini olive. Is that because the place is famous for getting folks in trouble?
If not in trouble, at least just pretty good and drunk, frankly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, those drinks are no joke. And so when I and the rest of the world heard that was the scene, you know, earlier in the night for much of what, you know, for the rest of Eddie Johnson's evening, I think our eyes popped out of our heads like, oh no, who would ever spend a few hours there and then try to do anything else afterward?
And it's not a late night place, is it?
No, I don't even think they're open that late. They are open actually early. They open for breakfast at 6 a.m. But it's kind of that happy hour post office, you know, have a couple drinks to unwind after a hard day at work. Yeah, definitely not a late night spot, though.
And the word is that recently they remodeled. Were the regulars upset that the place got too spiffy looking?
That I don't know. It was a little, not quite claustrophobic before the remodel, but a bit more insulated. It just, you know, it felt a little bit dated, and it, you know, was time to spiff it up. And they've actually added some foods to their menu that are a little less, you know, just kind of like the fried bar food you'd expect. Now it's salads and some lighter stuff. So they did, you know, spiff it up a bit, but I think what it's most beloved for is still the original, you know, strong drinks and french fries kind of thing.
So they're famous for what's called four finger pours, aren't they?
And then at least the times I drank there, you know, if you asked for your drink, they'd pour you that nice generous pour, maybe a little splash of soda on the top, and then they'd hand you the can alongside your drink in case you wanted to sort of continue diluting that drink, you know, or not, depending on your preference.
Ceres Cafe, that's C-E-R-E-S. And let's see, I'm trying to remember my high school Greek mythology. Is that the name? Is it the goddess of grain or something that relates to the Board of Trade?
You are not far off. I had to look this up myself, and I believe she is the goddess of agriculture,
okay,
perhaps,
mm-hmm.
And whether that has some sort of connection to commodities at the Board of Trade, I don't know, but I think you're right with your middle school Greek remembrance.
It's inside the Chicago Board of Trade building, but it's open to the public, isn't it?
Correct. Yep. And it's, like I said, a real mix of folks. I mean, I also had a friend, a bartender, who told me he used to make that his Saturday morning breakfast spot, because not many things down there are open, you know, at 6 a.m. on a Saturday. So really a great mix of people.
And now, as you write, an already storied space on the first floor of the Board of Trade adds another chapter to its long history. This event just more public than others. Lots of Chicagoans have suffered a hangover after a night at Ceres. Superintendent Johnson's will likely last the longest. Man, don't you feel sorry for the superintendent, really? Ending a nice career this way, it's so embarrassing. I kind of feel for him.
It is a very public downfall, I will say that. And many of us who have had drinks there are fortunate enough that we are private citizens and those walls can't talk. So, yeah.
One more thing about it. They're famous for serving like huge portions of french fries. I assume that's to help you soak up all the liquor.
It's a great pairing. I mean, we could talk about highfalutin wine and food pairings, but give me a nice cocktail and a plate of hot, salty french fries. I always thought it was perfect. So,
Kate, if people want to read your article, and it's written with a great flourish, I recommend it. It's online now, isn't it?
Correct. It's at chicagomag.com.
Okay, Kate, appreciate it. Thanks for filling us in on a place in Chicago, a legendary place, a famous place that I had never heard of until now. But apparently,
yeah.
Superintendent Johnson and many others have. And you have a good day, Kate. Thanks for checking in with us.
Yes. Thanks so much.
Hey, it's 8:55, and the John Williams broadcast starts in about 5 minutes. And John, which button turns on your microphone? Oh, that one. How you doing?
Do you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's been
a
while.
Good job, sir. I run on the board.
Well, barely. Only the bare minimum. What's going on?
Some of us who are here every day don't hit the buttons right. I'm very proud of you,
well,
sir.
Well, that makes me feel better. What do you got lined up for the boys and girls today?
Well, visit with one of the aldermen in Chicago. I wanted to talk to her about a couple of things, including this ethics rule. The idea is that if you're working for the city or state, you shouldn't be allowed to lobby for the state or the city. And the fact that they haven't made that a rule, a regulation already is pretty amazing. I'll also ask her about the superintendent story and some of the things you were talking about. Not good bars to get a drink in Chicago, maybe, but we'll ask her a little bit about her thoughts on that. And the pot laws, too. I was kind of laughing at some of the, you know, so in January, it'll be legal to smoke marijuana. Can you smoke it on your balcony?
I would think so.
Not supposed to. Can you smoke it in your backyard?
Why not?
You have to have a tall enough fence.
What?
Well, seriously. And I'm thinking, is it because that the odor is going to offend other people? You can't walk around Chicago right now. You don't pick up a pretty good whiff pretty much all of the time.
I'm just worried about people who are going to be driving high.
Yeah, I guess you should. You know, you can smoke a cigarette while you're driving, but you're not supposed to smoke pot. And yeah. Hopefully people have the same sensibility about that as, like, drinking and driving. You can drink a soda, but you can't drink a beer.
And what are the police going to do? There's no breathalyzer, so what are they going to do? Just walk up to a suspicious driver with a bag of candies and see if they go for it, see if they have the munchies, and then you're under arrest?
You know, I don't know about drivers, but they don't do it with pedestrians already. I mean, it's been illegal to smoke pot, period. And I'm telling you, I think my view is that the incidence of recreational marijuana is very high in the city of Chicago.
I think you're right. Yeah. Okay. Well, more on that coming up momentarily. Yeah. Do we have time for this call or not? We do? All right. That means Garrett in Woodstock gets the last word today. Good morning, Garrett.
Good morning. I was listening about the conversation about the Ceres Cafe and about the name of the Greek goddess of agriculture, Ceres.
Mm-hmm.
The statue that's on top of the Chicago Board of Trade is a statue of Ceres.
That's
That's where the name comes from, and that's the reference, is the goddess statue that's up on top of the building.
Okay, thank you, Orion Samuelson Jr. We appreciate that. And I hope you have a nice day, and we will see you tomorrow morning here on the Steve Cochran Show. Oh, the news is coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, but we still have a couple minutes here, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay. I programmed myself to actually be completely done right now.
I'm like a fine-tuned
stopwatch. You know what I mean?
So I just got the last end of that conversation about the series.
Yeah.
And that's the goddess of grain,
yep,
corn. Makes sense if you're a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where when you go to get your drink, they'll serve you four fingers of whatever it is you want.
Yeah, they heavy-duty pours.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if they were, you know, we were wondering yesterday if they're going to name a drink after.
After the superintendent?
Or a woman, not his wife, was Cochran's suggestion of what to call the drink. I think that phrase has been bandied about way too much. I don't think poor Eddie Johnson deserves it.
No, I was saying that. The press conference, when was that, a week or so ago, where the mayor heaped praise on the superintendent?
Yeah, right.
And it was very lovely, and you think, okay, that's a nice way to go out, and then this happens.
Yeah.
You know?
So fast forward a year or 10 years, how are people going to remember Eddie Johnson? And I hope that despite all of this attention right now, people will go, wait, 30-plus years? A few years as the superintendent. Crime went down while he was there. He gave his life to this city. I think we need to remember that.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of folks around Chicago will have new respect for him after how he went out at that bar. I mean, you know, that's kind of a nice Chicago story.
Maybe so. Maybe that's fitting. Maybe that is the Chicago way. All right. Well, I'll get ready to think big thoughts after the 9 o'clock edition of the news.
Oh, that was very smooth, John. I'll just point my finger and this will happen.